It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Morena, Mayor Phil Goff, how are you?
Morena, Rachel, I'm good. It's a bit of a miserable day out there, and I just wish instead of looking like it's going to rain, it should pour down, particularly over Hunua. But apart from that, yeah, we're 60%, but it hasn't moved much in the last 2 weeks, and I see we're still looking at an El Nino condition that says we're going to have a dry September, October, November.
So we'd normally be sitting at about 80, is that right, or just over 80?
85, right. 85 actually, probably at this time of the year. So we're still way below. We're keeping our demand within the targeted level, but we're just not we're not getting the rain over the lakes yet.
Oh dear! Yes,
it's becoming a bit of a refrain. I think
it is. Unfortunately, I mean that's the thing with the drought, isn't it? We do have some good news though, which we want to talk about, which is some of the walking tracks in the Waitakere's will be reopening. They were of course closed because of Cody dieback, and then COVID put a bit of a halt on some of the sort of adaptions that were happening to the tracks to make it so that people could walk there without damaging the Cody forest more. This is quite an exciting thing to see. They'll be ready in time for summer, is that right?
Yeah, there's going to be 9 walking tracks in our regional parks that will reopen by the end of this year. In fact, we opened at the end of July the Spraggs Bush track, which is a 2 kilometre track between Scenic Drive and Turanga Road in the Waitakere's. Most of the tracks reopening are in the Waitakere's, but there's the Waharo loop and the Hunua Ranges and part of the Glenfern track on Aotea, Great Barrier Island. So we're putting actually quite a lot of money into this. We, through the Natural Environment Targeted Rate in 2018, we've put aside $105 million over 10 years to fight kauri dieback disease. And this year, for example, we'll be spending about $10.5 million, more than half of that, about $6.5 million on track upgrades. If we get the tracks right, then the main vector is human beings. Then we don't transfer the kauri dryback disease from one area to another. But we're also putting money, about $4 million, into surveillance, treatment and research, community engagement and compliance monitoring. So all of that's important, and we've chiselled a little bit of money out of the government from their Jobs for Nature program, another $5 million over 4 years. So that's about $1.25 million a year.
That is very good to hear that we're getting all of that. What's actually, where are we at with sort of, I guess, the research around Cody dieback as a disease? Because obviously this is kind of ultimately, hopefully, an interim measure so that we can be eventually back in the forest as we would be pre-worrying about dieback.
I'd like to see, frankly, more money from government into the research and development. We're using what's called phosphite, which we can inject into the tree, which is diseased, and it will contain the disease rather than cure the disease. But, you know, there's a hell of a lot of kauri trees, and you can't use phosphite on all of them. But we're going through trials with that. But, you know, this is a problem that extends from Northland down to Tauranga and across, through that line of kauri trees. And some people say, oh, look, you won't be able to control the disease. You just have to let it take its course, and those strains of kauri that are resistant to it will survive. Yeah, that's great, but some of these trees are 300, 400, 500 years old, and when you lose them, you're not going to get those sort of trees back. Not simply in our lifetime, but over generations and generations and generations. And you know, the thought of something like Tane Mahuta being infected and dying, it'd just be you'd be losing a huge heritage, an iconic tree from New Zealand. So we are keen. You know, the kauri tree is, you know, a very special thing, particularly for the upper North Island, and we want to do everything we can to preserve it. So, you know, in the last long-term plan, I took it from a 10-year budget of $3 million to a 10-year budget of $105 million. So that shows we are taking it really seriously.
That is good to hear, but obviously still work to be done and community effort as well.
I mean, what was the big incentive was that in the surveillance in the Waitakere's, we found that the number of trees, the percentage of trees infected had increased over a couple of years from 9% to 18%. And that was really a wake-up call and a warning. And so we had to act, and we did act, and not everybody approved the fact that we closed the tracks. But it was, you know, okay, short-term inconvenience, you can't use the tracks, but the long-term survival of the colliery was far more important, and that's what we prioritised.
Well, I want to talk about COVID a little bit because it's obviously still the world we're living in, and some of the economic fallout is sort of really just starting to hit some of our major cultural institutions in Auckland, one being the museum. They've got an $8 million blow hit by COVID-19, and they've announced that they'll be cutting their Māori cultural performances. Actually, I think that has finished now. That was last week. And that was servicing primarily an overseas audience. What kind of cuts are we seeing across some of our major public institutions in Auckland?
Well, I think, you know, the lockdown had a pretty crippling effect on theatres and cultural organisations right across the board. And, you know, using a broad definition of that, you know, we closed the museum, we closed MOTAP, we closed the zoo, we closed, all the theatres were closed, and I was down at the ASB Theatre for the International Film Festival, and they were saying, well, you know, this was a, you know, this had a pretty hefty financial impact on us. In fact, the film festival was largely online, but because we got back to level one, they were able to have an opening night, and some of the films I went to see, The True Story of the Ned Kelly Gang, which is... I won't talk about it in case some of you haven't seen it yet. It had a pretty brutal effect on our cultural and our sporting organisations. And at the same time, it hammered some of the sources of funding beyond council. For the museum, for example, normally we'd be funding about 75% through the ratepayer of the museum costs, which is about, we're spending $30-35 million a year on them. Now we're funding 97% of them because things like international tourists and the international tourists actually pay to get into the museum, and appropriately so, because we're ratepayers. We go to see it because we're Aucklanders and ratepayers, so we don't get charged. But international visitors, you know, find that, I think they pay $25 or something. They think it's huge value for money because it's a great institution.
But without that money at the moment, is the council having to cover that for a lot of... Is it just the museum that's happening for, or is it for a lot of other spaces too?
No, it's for a lot of other spaces, and obviously we just don't have the financial means to cover all of that. In fact, what we've done with the museum and MOTAT and the Auckland Regional Facilities Amenities Fund, which covers a range of other, you know, groups, including the Auckland Philharmonic Orchestra, we rather than cut the money that we granted to them, we put it on hold. And so we weren't in a position to increase.
So what does that actually look like in practice if you're putting it on hold rather than cutting it? Does that kind of have the same immediate effect? Or
It means that the things that the museum and other organisations would have liked to have done ideally, they couldn't do. So they would normally have got about a 2.5% increase in their income from us, and we held that income static. And that's just a reflection of the economic reality that we're facing, you know. Nobody wants to see the rates hugely increase because everybody's felt the impact of COVID-19. We kept our rates increase at the planned 3.5%. We didn't put it up. But at the same time, we suffered what was effectively a 28% cut in rates because we lost $450 million from non-rates revenue sources.
Are you concerned about the ability for some of these cultural institutions to keep functioning at the moment? Are you particularly worried about that, or do you think that these things like the museum, like the art gallery, spaces like that will be able to keep going in the meantime? Have you got any major concerns at the moment?
Look, they will keep going, the big institutions. Some of the smaller ones, I mean, you know, institutions like the Q Theatre was already in some financial difficulty even before COVID-19, and that's had an impact on them. No, look, the museum will come through and the art gallery will come through. They're great institutions. The zoo, I was really pleased to see. I think we got 55,000 people visiting the zoo during the school holidays.
But those because, smaller spaces, are you a bit worried about them?
Yeah, the smaller theatres, etc., and some of the organisations, including the orchestra. You know, I'd love to put more money into the orchestra. They're paid the minimum wage, a lot of those musicians. There's a lot of extra spending I'd like to do, but we're just bound to keep within our income, and when our income is slashed so dramatically, we're not in a position to help them out when they probably most need the help. So we do what we can, and we've tried not to further disadvantage them. But that was the impact of lockdown, and better that impact than to have what's happening in Melbourne, where if we hadn't done the lockdown properly, if we hadn't gone hard and gone early, we'd be in another lockdown now, because we would have had a further outbreak of the disease. So we celebrate on one side that we are getting back to normal.
But it's going to be some hard work from here on out as well.
Undoubtedly so, Rachel, and you know, my big fear, the thing that wakes me up in the middle of the night, is if we got another outbreak and we had to go back into lockdown, well, just imagine the human impact, the impact on business, the impact on council, and the impact on government, because the government can't keep borrowing forever just to, you know, for things like wage subsidies. So the second time round would be even more dramatic. And, you know, the last thing we want is that. And that's why we need to be vigilant, and we need to support the government in its efforts just to maintain a secure border and good quarantine. And we need to probably get back into the habit of, lifting the testing and improving the contact tracing.
Probably very wise advice there. Very quickly, before we let you go, I do just want to touch on a couple of interesting waste projects that are happening around the city. Can you tell us a little bit about the community recycling centres, what's going on there at the moment?
Well, we run 9 recycling centres, and next year we'll have a 10th one opening in Onehunga, and we opened a couple last year up at Warkworth and Wellsford. And the idea, people talk about a linear economy where you take the resource, you make the product, and then you dispose of it, including to landfill, and replacing that with a circular economy where we consider, when we're making the product, the full life of the product, and design it to last longer and be repurposed at the end of its use. And what these recycling centres do is, you go through them, they're great fun actually, because they've got permanent workers there and they've got volunteer workers, and everybody's as keen as hell because they know they're doing good things for the planet. And instead of wasting the resource into landfill, we reuse the resource and recycle it. And it could be things like used furniture, or it could be, motor mowers, or it could be just recycling the metals and the plastic and the wood,
right,
and the all of those sort of things. So what we got from the government, always, willing to acknowledge when we get help from the government, $10 million, just over $10 million, I think it was about $10.4 million, to put into the infrastructure for our resource recycling centres. And that will strengthen them. It'll create 50 new jobs. But most importantly, it just brings us back into the habit of recycling, reusing, not wasting and landfilling.
Well, thank you very much for your time this morning. Mayor Phil Gough, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you again next Tuesday.
Look forward to it.
See you then. Bye.
Cheers. Bye.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Gough.
Thank you.